The prince bit his lip, and I saw it was time for a diplomatic intervention. "If your highness pleases," says I, "Major Sapten is right. Every moment I continue in Strachan's is dangerous for both of us, but especially for you. I must go, and quickly. Believe me, it is for the best. And as the major has remarked, there is no debt." Wasn't there, though? I kept my face smooth, but underneath I was beginning to smart with hurt and anger. I hadn't asked to be embroiled in the politics of their tin-pot little duchy, but I'd been bloody near killed more times than I could count, cut and wounded and half-drowned, scared out of my wits, and all I was getting at the end of it was the sneers of Sapten and the handshake of his blasted highness. 10 minutes before, I'd been thankful to come out with a whole skin, but suddenly now I felt full of spite and anger towards them. There was a bit of mumbling and grumbling, but it was all hypocrisy. Indeed, I don't doubt that if Carl Gustav had been given an hour or two longer to recover from the scare he'd had, and his consequent gratitude to me, he would have been ready to listen to a suggestion from Sapten that I should be slipped back down the pipe for a second time, with my hands tied this time. After all, his face was like mine, so his character might be too. For the moment, though, he had the grace to look troubled. He probably thought he owed it to his princely dignity to do something for me. But he managed to fight it down, they usually do, and the upshot of it was that they agreed that I should ride out as quickly as possible. They would stay where they were for the night, so that his highness could rest and take counsel, and there was a broad hint that I'd better be over the frontier by morning. Grundvig seemed the only one who was unhappy about my sudden dismissal. He was an odd one, that, and I gathered from what he said that he alone had come round to the view that I was more sinned against than sinning. He actually seemed rather sorry for me, and he was the one who eventually escorted me up from that dungeon, and ordered a horse to be found, and stood with me in the castle gateway while they went to the mainland for it. "I am a father too, you see," says he, pacing up and down. "I understand what it must mean to a man when his loved ones are torn from him and used as hostages against him. Who knows? I, too, might have acted as you did. I trust I should have behaved as bravely when the time came." "Silly bastard," I thought. "That's all you know." I asked him what had happened to Rudy, and he said he didn't know. They'd seen him vanish through a side door in the outer cell, and had given chase, but had lost him in the castle. Presumably he knew its bolt holes and had got away. I didn't care for the sound of this, but it was long odds I wouldn't run into him again anyway. I wasn't planning on lingering, just long enough for the notion that was beginning to form in my mind. Then one of the peasants returned with a horse and a cloak for me. I asked a few directions of Grundvig, accepted a flask and a pouch of bread and cheese, and swung into the saddle. Just the feel of the horse moving under me was heartening. I could hardly wait to be away from that beastly place and everything in it. Grundvig didn't shake hands, but he waved solemnly. And then I turned the horse's head, touched her with my heel, and clattered away across the bridge, out of the lives of Carl Gustav, the sons of Volsungs, old Uncle Tom Cobley, and all. I took the Strachan City Road and never looked back at the cold pile of Jotunberg. I hope they all caught pneumonia. You would think, no doubt, that after what I'd gone through, I would have no thought but to get out of Strachan's in Germany as fast as a clean pair of heels could take me. Looking back, I wonder that I had any other notion. But the truth is that I did. It's a queer thing. While I'm the sorriest coward in moments of danger, there is no doubt that escape produces an exhilaration in me.